Welcome to the Leader's Notebook with Dr. Mark Rutland. Dr. Rutland is a world-renowned leadership expert. He is a New York Times best-selling author, and he has served as the president of two universities. The Leader's Notebook is brought to you by Global Servants. For more information about Global Servants, please visit our website, globalservants.org. Here is your host, Dr. Mark Rutland.
Hello, this is Mark Rutland. Welcome to the Leader's Notebook. This brief series on the Leader's Notebook is the most different of anything that I've ever recorded for this podcast. I hope you enjoy it, and I hope that you enjoy the book that I'm previewing. My newest book is called Keep On Keeping On, How to Die Young as Old as Possible. I hope that you will get it through the website, drmarkrutland.com. You can pre-order this book, Keep On Keeping On, How to Die Young as Old as Possible. I want to give you this special invitation, though, on November the 18th at 7 p.m. at Mount Perrin Church of God Central in Atlanta, November the 18th at 7 p.m. will be the national premiere for this book, and you're invited to attend. It's going to be a great night. We'll have lots of fun, some giveaways and door prizes. There'll be some great music by Stan Whitmire and Mark Blankenship. Now, who should attend? It's an exclusive event that we're calling for mature audiences only. That doesn't mean senior citizens. It means mature audiences only. If you've never seen a hula hoop, if you have no idea what a slinky is, and if you're not 100% convinced that Elvis Presley was greater than Taylor Swift, you may not know what's going on, but you're invited. We want to see you there. This is the national premiere, and you're going to love it. It's going to be a great night. November the 18th, Mount Perrin Church of God Central at 7 p.m. Keep on keeping on, how to die young as old as possible. I want to just give you a few highlights from the book to intrigue you. I'm not going to go through the whole book. It is a book basically about aging gracefully, to help people approach the aging process with laughter, to let go of all the things that we clutch and hang on to that weigh us down, to keep our memories in perspective, to keep on being sweet. You know, getting old doesn't have to make you angry. To keep on giving. Sometimes our life perspective, the decrease in revenue that we have, or whatever life does to us in that way, it can make us not just more cautious about giving, it can actually make us stingy with life and with others. Keep on keeping it real, to be real about who we are, what we can do, what we can't do, and then to keep on being forgiving. To forgive our friends, our relatives, God, life, history, and then finally to keep on being grateful, to live our aging years in grace. One of the chapters in the book is on keep on laughing, and I would say that it's my favorite chapter in the book, and I hope you enjoy it. Maybe it's the heart of the book. To be able to laugh at life and laugh at ourselves. If you've never yet raised up underneath a low-hanging kitchen cabinet and knocked your brains loose, your turn is coming. But when you do it, instead of being angry at your wife who laughs or kicking the cat, laugh at yourself. Laugh first. Give her permission to laugh. Laugh at how funny you look and as you lie on the kitchen floor, oozing blood, laugh at how silly an old person looks who's just knocked their brains loose on the kitchen cabinet. Ella Wheeler Wilcox wrote one of my favorite poems. She said, "Laugh and the world laughs with you. Weep and you weep alone. For the sad old earth must borrow its mirth, but has trouble enough of its own." We must let people borrow our mirth. Proverbs 17:22 says, "A merry heart doeth good like medicine." I urge you to get this book and take your medicine like a big boy. I determined early on that a merry heart may come naturally to some. Sometimes you have to encourage it and make it happen. Circumstances may make for more or less merriment, to be sure, but the bottom line is we can choose to be merry. If there's one thing that can make our senior years better and healthier, it is the sweet, sweet medicine of laughter. My advice to seniors is laugh a lot. The story is told of a young man who took a seat on a bus stop and found himself on the bench all alone with a nun. He regarded her for a moment, dressed as she was in her classical black and white habit, and finally he said, "Sister, I wouldn't offend you for anything, but I must tell you something. I have always harbored a secret desire to one day kiss a nun. I don't know where this came from. I just can't shake it. But I feel before I die, I must fulfill this wish. Please let me kiss you. Nothing passionate, nothing romantic, just a little peck on the cheek. No one can see us. What would it hurt for me to just give you a little kiss on the cheek? If you'll let me do that, I could die happy." The sister studied the young man for a moment and then decided he seemed harmless enough. "All right," the nun said. "I cannot imagine what would hurt. Okay, I'll let you kiss me on two conditions. You have to be single and you must be a Catholic." "Wow," he said, "this is my day. I am single and I am a Catholic." With that, he leaned over and gently kissed her cheek. Then he laughed in her face. He said, "The joke's on you, sister. I'm married and I'm a Baptist." "No," said the nun, "the joke's on you. My name is Kevin, and I'm on my way to a costume party." Absent an authentic sense of humor, we turn life into a pathetic, sad costume party, pretending to believe each other's rented outfits. That is one thing that is so sad about the so-called cancel culture. Nothing, least of all ourselves, is funny anymore. Here, the phrase, deadly serious. You ever hear that? How about this one? Serious as a heart attack. A life without laughter is deadly serious indeed. And a heart attack may indeed be what joylessness leads to. Many years ago, a friend of mine, a fellow minister, had a tragic accident. He fell out of a tree and broke his arm, and in the process, it became terribly infected, and he had to have his arm amputated. I went to the hospital to visit with him, and I was dreading the task of having to comfort him about the loss of his arm. "Don't worry," he said. "All things work together for good." He said, "You're a great preacher. I'm not a great preacher. I could never have hoped to be the best preacher in America or the best preacher in this state. But I may very well become the best one-armed preacher in the state. Who knows, maybe in the nation." Perspective is everything. Life is important, all life. From conception to heaven, life is precious and unspeakably important to God. Therefore, it goes without saying that life should be important to us as well. It does not, however, actually go without saying. It gets said over and over and over again. We hear it all the time. This or that life matters. Your life matters. You are important to God. All of that is true. It's true. I'm not making light of it. It's just that we draw the unfortunate conclusion that because our lives are important to God, whatever is important to me must therefore be of ultimate importance to God and to the entire universe, or if it's not, it should be. We turn pro-life, which we ought to be, into pro-me, which we ought not to be. Our egos take hold of one end of a great truth and bolt up a blind alley of self-importance until the true part is blurred beyond recognition and the remaining self part is in neon lights. Self-importance, self-exaltation, self-everything, indeed all the hyphenated sins destroy all of humility and meekness and at last humor. The thugs of Antifa and the white-robed wizards of the KKK have far more in common than either one of them wants to believe. Rip away their bedsheets and their balaclavas, and they're the same angry, self-important little fascists. If there is one thing fascists hate, it's humor, especially at their expense. They will not allow anyone to laugh at them. I don't suppose anyone really enjoys being the butt of a joke, but a fascist will kill you for it, or fine you, or demote you, or cancel you, or whatever he can. There is something hysterically funny about a grown man with a bedsheet over his head. Angry protesters screaming nonsensical slogans, literally nonsensical, are just plain laughable. Sad, yes, more than a bit scary, but above all, funny. They have become so important in their own minds that whatever they are saying, or rather screaming, becomes so important that they wind up saying some really funny stuff. Their wild-eyed hysterics are actually funny. Their crazed eyes become the Google Eye spectacles we used to wear at Halloween when we were kids. Remember those? They see nothing, absolutely nothing funny in anything they do, which is, of course, the funniest thing of all, since a great deal of what they do couldn't be made up in a Coen Brothers movie. Oh, if only the trap of humorless self-importance were confined to LGBTQ protesters and retired generals. Alas, the church is rife with it. Preachers can become so convinced of their own importance that as far as they're concerned, every word that drops from their mouth is an apple of gold in a silver bowl. Who dares challenge the man of God? Intoxicated with wildly exaggerated importance of serving on the board of a local church or college, laymen can actually begin to think that they and their opinions are of wildly exaggerated importance. Absurd inconsequentialities become a no man's land of meetings in the back room of a church no one ever heard of, or a college that imagines itself to be infinitely significant. Board members looking for all the world like Tweedledee and Tweedledum in a cage match live in some fantasy world where they say what they think they say is important and must be heard and must be heeded. Humorless self-importance turns leadership, especially church leadership, into the theater of the absurd. No, let me take that back. It's not even good theater of the absurd. It just turns it into absurd theater of the absurd. A sense of humor is not knowing what's funny. It's knowing what's funny about you. Anger and self-pity leave little room for laughter, and laughter is the social witness of a merry heart. Age and all its aches and pains rot the sweet fruit of merriment on the vine and fertilize the bitter weeds of self-pity. The older we get, the more important it is to laugh, especially at ourselves. In leadership, this podcast is called The Leader's Notebook. In leadership, one of the most important things a leader could learn is that some of the stuff you do think that is so important is actually funny. Remember, we are who we are, and some of what we are and some of what we do deserves to be laughed at. Laugh first. It's a sad life indeed that constantly rails at everyone. It's not funny, when actually it is funny. My wife and I were at a dinner party when the movie Bonnie and Clyde was mentioned. A pathetically culturally deprived man in his mere 40s, a child, if you will, had never heard of the famous movie nor of Faye Dunaway. I patiently explained that it was a groundbreaking movie that had come out nearly 60 years earlier. Another man at the table, who was about my age, erupted. "What are you talking about?" he howled. "Not 60 years ago. That movie didn't come out 60 years ago." "No," I asked. "When do you think it came out?" "I know exactly when it came out," he said. "It came out the year I graduated from high school, 1967. "Right," I said, as I counted them off on my fingers. 67, 77, 87, 97, 2007, 2017, he looked gut-punched. "Oh no," he literally moaned. "You're right. 56 years. Now that's funny. You gotta admit it. At the horrified look on his face, the whole table laughed. "There's nothing to do about it. Faye Dunaway is 82. Warren Beatty is nearly 90. Tempus has fugited. And if you cannot laugh, avoid mirrors at all cost." As Ella Wilcox said, "Laugh and the world laughs with you. Weep and you weep alone." No one wants to be in a hospital. No one wants to be sick or in pain. But growl at the nurse with a hypodermic needle in her hand, and you may wish you'd laughed. I hope you enjoy this new book. It's called Keep On Keeping On, How to Die Young as Old as Possible. The book is available right now, and I want you to jump on it and pre-order. You can go to the website, drmarkrutland.com, and we'll get that book to you just as soon as possible. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this little excerpt and some commentary on my newest book, Keep On Keeping On, How to Die Young as Old as Possible. Now, just before we wrap up the Leader's Notebook for today, I want to remind you that you're invited to the national book premiere of this funny, charming book. I just know you're going to love it, at Mount Perrin Church of God Central, November the 18th, 7 p.m. We're going to have a blast. See you then. God bless you. Keep on keeping on.
You've been listening to The Leader's Notebook with Dr. Mark Rutland. You can follow Dr. Rutland on X at Dr. Mark Rutland or visit his website, drmarkrutland.com, where you can find information about his materials and his app. Join us next week for another episode of The Leader's Notebook.